Well, good morning, friends. Welcome to church on Sunday morning. It's great to be here, and I'm pinch hitting because Nate's in Thailand. Wouldn't that be nice right now? We're here and freezing, but it's great to be with you this morning. Hey, a couple of things. If you need notes, a note card or a Bible, we've got Koa, Dimitri, they'll hand you something. Just, you know, I wave to them, nod to them, offer a tip to them, do something, but they'll help you out. And over here on my right, your left, there are baskets. Hey, if you have a prayer concern, prayer request, I know the staff would be delighted to have you just jot a note so that they're mindful of that, can maybe reach out to you or certainly be prayerful for you. If you're new to Emmaus, would just like to know some more information, this is a chance to grab a card, grab a pen. And those note cards can be left in one of the boxes at the doors as you're leaving today. Just a way to sort of stay in touch with the staff here. Well, this January we're doing this series entitled Good News. And everybody likes to share good news, don't we? I mean, we might say, hey, good news, we're expecting a baby, for example, and everybody celebrates. Or good news, I got a job. Or good news, we found an apartment. Or good news, he didn't give me a ticket when he pulled me over. We like to share good news, but there is good news that transcends the circumstances of our lives. Most of the good news we get is just the stuff that's happening to us. But there is good news that carries us through highs and lows. There is good news that won't change. It won't be retracted. It won't be revised. And that's what this series has been all about. And Pastor Nate began a couple of weeks ago by saying, we are called by God. That's not going to be changed. That won't be retracted. That won't be revised. It doesn't matter what happens to you. It doesn't matter what you do. We're called by God. We're valued by God, he talked about last week. And this morning, another story from the life of Jesus that declares another facet of this, for want of a better term, a good news diamond, right? Hansen's disease drives people apart and produces outsiders. It's insidious. It is a contagious bacterial infection. It starts under the skin. It produces sores, lumps, bumps. And gradually the bacteria moves to the extremities of the hands and the feet where it kills the nerves. And over time, you can't feel things. You can't feel sharp things. You can't feel hot things. And so you injure yourself in ways you don't even imagine, and in ways that other people wouldn't normally injure themselves. And over time, you become disfigured, you become grotesque, you might even become incapacitated. Hansen's disease is probably better known to most of us by its more common name, leprosy. It's still around. It's still out there. In 1865, the native people of Hawaii had a serious outbreak of leprosy. It was brought to the Hawaiian Islands by the sailors and the traders. They brought it with them, and the state legislature at the time decided this was posing such a threat to the native islanders that they would quarantine those with leprosy to a place called Molokai. Some of you might be familiar with it. They passed legislation to require it, and they gave some supplies, they gave some food to people, and they began shipping people out in 1865 to Molokai, where they could just fend for themselves. Men, women, children, no infrastructure, no social settings in place. And as you might imagine, after a couple of years, the place just devolved into chaos. It was every man for himself. The Catholic Church wanted to send somebody who might be able to address the spiritual needs of the people. But they knew full well it would probably be a death sentence. It's not the sort of thing that you would normally ask someone to do. So the bishop asked for volunteers, and a 33-year-old Belgian priest by the name of Father Damien put his hand up. He said, I'll go. He was the same age then as Jesus was when he was crucified. And 6 months after his arrival, he wrote back to his brother in Europe and he said, I make myself a leper with the lepers to gain all to Jesus Christ. And he began establishing a church. But he also began to dress the wounds and the needs of the people. He began to build homes. He began to build schools. He began to help build the infrastructure so that the chaos might become order once more. And then in December of 1884, he put his foot in some scalding water. And he lifted it out, and the skin blistered quickly, immediately, and he felt nothing. And he realized, after 16 years, he had contracted leprosy. 5 years later, at just the age of 49, he died. And Father Damien is legendary in Hawaii. Because who would reach out and touch a leper? I mean, wouldn't it be more sensible to say, we'll raise money and send it to you? Wouldn't it be better to say, hey, you're in my prayers? Wouldn't it be better simply to send word of encouragement from time to time? But he reached out and he touched them. And in fact, he was simply doing what Jesus did. And in one of the stories that has become one of my favorite stories in the Gospels, and I remember the first time I really spent time in this story was spring of 1984, if you can believe it. There are very few passages of the Bible that I can tell you the time when I read that story and it touched my life. But this story touched me in spring of 1984. And in Mark chapter 1, we read these words, "A leper came to Jesus, begging him and falling on his knees before him, saying, 'If you are willing, you can make me clean.' And moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched the man, and he said, 'I am willing, be cleansed.' And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed." Leprosy in the ancient world produced social distance. It produced marginalization. It had to have caused tremendous fear. In Jewish society, as in others, in fact, as well, if you contracted leprosy, you had to leave the town or the village. You could not stay with your family. You had to go outside the gates. You had to go outside the walls. And you're expected to warn people, anytime they approached you, that you were unclean. Unclean! Unclean! They're coming toward me. Unclean! Unclean! You had to tell people. It was your duty, it was your social duty, your moral and ethical duty to warn people of what you carried. They represented a physical threat to the people around them. They represented a religious threat to the purity of the people. Not only might they render people religiously unclean, but then they were also cut off from all the religious practices that might have nurtured their souls. Couldn't go to the temple. Not welcome at the synagogue on Saturday, couldn't worship with family or friends, and often if you were cast outside the walls, you were not only cast out, but your family was plunged into deeper and deeper poverty. It was potentially a life sentence. Never mind the 10 days of quarantine that we get for COVID. This was often a lifetime of separation and isolation. You had to leave the community. You were marginalized, and most people with time simply forgot about you. Family maybe not, but most others, yeah. We remember when you were a part of this village or this town, but not now. And it must have been terrifying. But there's some pieces of this short little story that surprise me. First, what was Jesus doing anywhere near a leper settlement? What was he doing within walking distance or approachability of a place like that? And what was he thinking not to turn tail and just hightail it out of there? If he knew who this man was, why does he stand there and let the man come to him? Did he not know this man was a threat and a danger to him? Then I'm puzzled by the break in protocol. The man runs to Jesus. Custom and protocol demands that he runs from Jesus. I'm unclean. Bye. That's how it should have been. He had absolutely no business approaching the rabbi or anyone else who's not likewise afflicted. In fact, it's his duty to distance himself. And that day, he lays aside his duty and runs to Jesus. And then what's even more remarkable in this story is that Jesus is moved with compassion and he reaches out and he touches the man. And he says, "I am willing, be cleansed." And the leprosy leaves him and he's cleansed. Moved with compassion. The word is used to describe Jesus four times in Matthew's gospel and twice here in Mark's gospel. It communicates to us that God is compassionate. But if I can just sort of take a bunny trail for a moment, not all of us feel that, do we? Not all of us feel the compassion of God. I wonder if this might not be one of the harder things to believe in the story. I don't know how long this guy had had leprosy. Maybe he was diagnosed the day before. Maybe it just happened. Maybe he'd been outside the walls for years. I have no idea. I really don't know how long he'd been grappling with it. But we do know for sure there were other lepers who were never healed by Jesus. Not because they didn't want healing, but because they could never get to him. I know there were other lepers in Israel who would have prayed fervently, "God, take this from me. This terrible, wicked thing, take it from me. Restore me to the community." People who died with their leprosy. People who died because of their leprosy. We might say, well, this lucky guy felt the compassion of God. It can be especially hard to believe in dark times that God is compassionate. Where is he when we need him? Why hasn't he shown up and taken this away from me that is separating me from other people, that is breaking my heart? Why must we walk in this dark place for so long and so alone? Jacques Luzerne was a blind French resistance fighter in World War II. He was not born blind, but when he was 7 years old, he had a terrible accident and both eyes were injured completely and permanently. He was completely blind. Soon after the accident, his friends and the neighbors who saw this little boy, this little seven-year-old boy who could no longer see and no prospect of ever seeing, they talked about what a disaster it was for him to be plunged into darkness like this for the rest of his life. They talked about how hard this would be, how difficult it would be, the journey ahead for him. But his parents refused to pity him. And they described his plunge into darkness in very different terms. His dad, who was a particularly spiritual man, reframed the experience for his young son, Jacques. He said, "Son, always tell me when you discover something new." St. John of the Cross was a 16th century mystic monk in Spain. He wrote a book that has become something of a classic called The Dark Night of the Soul. And to summarize a somewhat complex book, he sees the dark night as God's gift to us, strangely enough, to free us from immature perspectives of God, to free us from self-serving spiritual desires, to free us from shallow faith, because only the night sometimes can strip away the superficiality of the light. Not all darkness is bad. And as I ponder the other lepers of the day who also had to grapple with whether they would experience the compassion of God or not, I recognize that not all darkness is bad. Friends, if you're in a dark place today, tell me what you discover. If the sun shone all day long, none of us would ever see the stars. We would never know there was a night sky. We would have no sense of the universe beyond us, at least not from our eyesight. If the sun shone all day long, I'd never see a shooting star that flashed across the sky in the middle of the day. There are things we learn only because we travel sometimes in dark places. And suffering is not evidence of the absence of God, but it's an opportunity to discover Him in otherwise unknowable ways. But that day, the leper met Jesus, and Jesus, moved with compassion, did the unimaginable. He stretched out his hand and touched the man. Unbelievable. I might have said, hey, fella, just stop right there. Stop right there. You know, about 6 feet is good, right? Tell you what, how about we have a conversation and you bow your head, close your eyes, and I'll pronounce a blessing from a distance. It might have been that way had it been me, but not with Jesus. He touches the untouchable. And there's something powerful about that. Years ago, I was as an intern in a church in Southern California. I was a really young guy. I knew nothing. I don't know much more now. In fact, I think I know less now than some of the things I thought I knew then. And the pastor said to me, hey, David, I want you to jump in your car, zip over to the hospital. One of our church members is dying in hospital with cancer. Ben, you want me to do what? On my own? He says, yeah. Jump in your car, go over there and just hold her hand and pray with her. I'm terrified. I'm terrified that I won't know what to say or what to do. I'm terrified because the smell of disinfectants makes my head spin. I don't do well in hospitals anyway. I'm terrified that I'm going to fail her in some way. But I jumped in the car, I did exactly what he asked me to do. And when I got there, I sat down in St. Jude's Hospital with Eileen Lance and reached over and just took her hand. Held her hand, and I discovered actually it didn't matter what I had to say. The power of the touch was remarkable. Friends, Jesus could hear between the lines. He understood the depth of this man's pain. He understood the grief the man was experiencing. He understood the isolation that was sucking this man's soul dry, and he felt compassion. I might have been awkward. He felt empathy. I might have feared the contagion. He felt compassion. I might have seen nobody special. And he saw a man made in the image of God. Somebody asked this morning, have you ever felt like a leper? Have you ever felt like nobody cares? Maybe it's something you did. Maybe it was mistakes you made, people you hurt, bad choices. Things that have come between you and the people around you, and you feel like, I don't belong to my family. My friendship group has moved on. I don't fit. I don't belong. I'm out on the edge. Maybe it's nothing you did. Or maybe it was something done to you that you feel unworthy and unable to be part of the mainstream. I just want to say this morning, in the simplest of messages, here at the start of 2024, our pain matters to Jesus. He sees it. He understands it. And no matter how far we find ourselves this morning outside the gates, and you might have just stepped outside the gates this last week, you may have been living there for years. The good news is God cares. You matter. Do you need the touch of Jesus in your life? He doesn't grab us harshly. He doesn't beat us. He doesn't push us or shove us. He doesn't squeeze us or pinch us or hurt us. He comes gently. He comes compassionately. He comes tenderly. But the story does have one little twist in it that for me has been profound. It's the request of the leper, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. You can make me clean. I'd have asked, Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me. You can fix me. But he says, you can make me clean. He wants cleansing. He wants to be purified. He wants to be renewed. And in that simple cry of the heart, I think he expresses the deepest and most profound longing of every human heart to be clean, to be pure again. Have you ever felt that burden? Lord, if you are willing, you can cleanse the memories and the dreams that haunt me. Lord, if you are willing, you can cleanse the filth that has accumulated in my heart. Lord, if you are willing, you can cleanse the garbage that has been stored up in my mind for too long. Lord, if you are willing, you can cleanse the guilt and the shame that plague me. You ever needed that kind of cleansing, washing, renewing? I remember in Sydney, Steve came to me and told me of his addiction to pornography as a young man. It thoroughly contaminated him and he carried it into his marriage. And 6 children later, he still could not shake off the images of his youth. Can Christ cleanse my mind? He asked me. In Las Vegas, I had a friend who served in special ops in clandestine operations in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. His name was Ron. And Ron came to me and told me that when he returned, having shed the blood of so many other people, every night he would wake up in a sweat with blood on his hands, and in his dream, in his nightmare, he is trying to wash it off and it simply wouldn't come off his hands. And he asked, can Christ cleanse my mind? Janine had had an abortion as a teenager. Jeff's alcoholism had cost him his family. Bill constantly carried around with him the stain of his divorce. Alice had resorted to cutting herself to minimize the pain. Can Christ really cleanse me? Each one asked. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. It is the deepest cry of the human heart. And I'm here this morning simply as a voice to say he is willing. And he can make you clean. And the nameless leper of the first century actually has a name. It's my name. It's your name. And the touch of Christ, if we will run to him against all odds, against all protocol, still heals and cleanses. Friends, Jesus continues to make unclean people clean again. We may carry the scars of disease or woundedness, but Jesus can restore our purity. Those things that make us unworthy, undeserving, filthy, or unclean are not beyond his restoring power. Those things that make us live away from people or live in the shadows are not beyond his grace and mercy. There's nobody beyond his compassion. And I've got to say, in a world rife with addictions and sexual debasement, with identity confusion, with violence and marital collapse, we might think we are beyond redemption. We might think it's got to be just a little too hard. We might conclude that we belong on the scrap heap, that we're unworthy of love and inclusion, that we deserve to be discarded, and they are the voices and the messages of the enemy of our souls. But for any of us who will run to Jesus, there is hope and not judgment. And in just 37 words in the original telling of the story, we are invited to see again the heart of God and the essence of the gospel so powerfully. Friends, this morning, this story invites us to enter into it and turn it into our own story as either the leper or the face in the hands of the Father, because everyone needs the touch. There's one last thing we ought not miss this morning. You see, we get no indication in this short story, and Mark's famous for keeping it short, and I'm thankful for that, no indication that Jesus needed to know if the man was an innocent victim or a careless individual who brought this upon himself. No indication whatsoever. It just doesn't matter at all. Jesus is unconcerned with where it comes from and only concerned with what lies ahead. Divine compassion is not reserved for the careful and the diligent. And if you've been careless, it matters not, because God's compassion is for all who are broken, alone, marginalized, or unclean. I wonder this week if you've been restored to community, if others might come to you and find that same restoration. Will you be the touch of Jesus in someone else's life? I'll finish with this. It's over a century ago now, Myra Brooks Welch wrote a poem that has captured this good news so beautifully, and periodically I come back to it because it just says it all for me. It was battered and scarred, and the auctioneer thought it hardly worth his while to waste his time on the old violin, but he held it up with a smile. "What am I bid, good people?" he cried. "Who starts the bidding for me? $1, $1, do I hear two? $2, who makes it three? $3 once, $3 twice, going for three." But no. From the room far back, a grey-haired man came forward and picked up the bow. Then, wiping the dust from the old violin and tightening up the strings, he played a melody pure and sweet as the angel sings. The music ceased, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, "What now am I bid for the old violin?" As he held it aloft with its bow. $1,000, do I hear two? $2,000, who makes it three? $3,000 once, $3,000 twice, going and gone," said he. The audience cheered and some of them cried, "We just don't understand. What changed its worth?" Swift came the reply, "The touch of the master's hand." And many a man with his life out of tune, all battered and beaten by sin, is auctioned cheap to a thoughtless crowd, much like that old violin, a chaotic mess, a shame-filled past, brokenness, guilt for what's done. He's going once, he's going twice, he's going and almost gone. But the master comes, and the foolish crowd can never quite understand the worth of a soul and the change that is wrought by the touch of the master's hand. It's good news, friends. This morning, Jesus invites us back in to town. God cares. Father, for those of us this morning who needed to hear this good news, for those of us who have lived on the edge, who have been pushed out and been living on the margins, for those of us who have felt unworthy, untouchable, unapproachable, unclean, in this very moment, would you, by your Spirit, come to us, stretch out your hand and touch us again. Restore us, renew us, purify us, we ask, because of Jesus. Amen.